Well, good to see our church family again. Glad to be back. We woke up this morning, it's like, okay, what time do we leave? What time do we need to be there? Where are we going this morning, right? We made it. It's glad to have the visitors dropping through on their way to Utah and to see all our members here. And it's good to be back together again. Had a good week. Small world we live in, or a big family we have, we by happenstance, some really good friends of ours from Arkansas happened to be in town over the weekend, last weekend, so we got to see them. I hadn't seen them in probably at least 10 years and maybe 15 years. And a few other families that we had connections with that we knew, it was good to... So is it a small world or a big family, whatever it is, it was good. And glad to be back. I'm down to two lessons in James. I want to look at it. And this one is about being steadfast. In James chapter 5, verse 7, you may be there. James chapter 5, verse 7. Let's take a look there at this passage. This is an interesting, in my mind, and I struggle with how much the application for that everybody's in tune with, and maybe some things that is not as interested to everybody, but this lesson is about being steadfast or being stable, anchored in the face of trials. In the face of trials. And so our reading this morning was that passage. And if you remember, all the way back at the beginning of the book, our very first lesson that I did from this was about blessing of trials. And it struck me yesterday or this morning. It finally struck me. I said, wait a minute. Are we dealing with the same topic or not? And this is why I won't bore you with this too much. But the lesson, the blessing of trials from the very first of the book and here almost at the end is talking about persecution. I have taken the thought right now that these are two different topics or slightly different. They certainly overlap. But the trials of life, the difficulties in life versus the persecution like the Jews were inflicted upon the Christians. And so now we are dealing with persecution. So it's a little bit different topic. And it is dealt with differently. And so as we look at this, I won't re-preach the first lesson, but it does indicate something more severe than just our trials that we may go through. And as with Christians of the first century, as Christians for us today, these have applications for us. And so let's take a look now at some of the things that are brought to our mind here in James, and that is the persecution of Christians. The actual persecution, the putting to death, the beating, the scourging, and those kind of things were taking place. That was happening in that era. And if you look at the previous verses that we didn't read, it kind of shows a picture of what was happening. And so starting in verse 4, notice now, in chapter 5, verse 1, it labels them as rich men. Okay, so I believe verses 1 through 6 here is about the rich Jew. Not a Christian, just the rich Jew. And so if we look, whether we think of that or not, but look what these rich people did and what they're accused of. Behold, the hired laborers who have reaped your fields, and you kept back their wages by fraud. Then they're what you've done cries out to God. And the cries of them which have reaped have entered to the ears of the Lord of Sabbath, or Lord of armies. You have lived in pleasures, in verse 5, on the earth. You've been wanton, been wasteful, and luxurious living. You've nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and killed the just, and he does not resist you. And verse 6 there is really powerful, isn't it? You have condemned and killed the just. Now we can put in there Jesus, because that's what they did, right? The Jews condemned and killed Jesus. But also, and he does not resist you, that could be Jesus, but I think that is talking about Christians. That is talking about those who follow Jesus, that believe in Jesus, who converted. These rich men killed. And so we see, and there's some more passages about that. And previously, as we studied, we talked about prejudice. And James talked in there in verse 6 and 7 of chapter 2. Look what these same category of people did in verse chapter 2, verse 6 and 7. You have despised the poor. Do not rich men Again, remember chapter 5, verse 1, go now, ye rich men. And so, chapter 2, verse 6, you've despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before judgment seats? Do they not blaspheme that worthy name by which you are called? So there they're drawn before judgment seats, and that's a reference to the synagogues. And that was prophesied. And so they were beaten. Christians were beaten. They were cast out of synagogues. If you remember the blind man, he was cast out. That's what he was cast out from in John 9 when we studied that lesson quite a while back. But even killing Christians. Remember Saul of Tarsus. He was going to Damascus with letters to go, and that was what they did. That was what was happening in their culture. And it was prophesied. We won't turn to these passages, but Jesus prophesied, look, you're going to be tortured, you're going to be beaten, and you're going to be brought before synagogues. This stuff is before judgment seats, and this is going to happen. And it did happen. We can see in Acts that it specifically happens. But here James references those things. Here James references those things. So we're talking about persecution of Christians in this section of Scripture. The things that happened in the synagogues themselves, or in life in general, in chapter 5, it just talks about they withheld wages. And that's just the workers. Like somebody come in and work in your field, and they said, I'm not going to pay you everything I said I was going to pay you. I'm going to keep back part of that because I can. Because you can't win in court. You're not going to take me to court. You have no advocate. And I'm going to win. And so that kind of mentality, right, with the rich. That was persecution. Persecution of the physical and persecution of life itself. Whether they were beaten or even killed by their own brethren, by their own Jews, by their brothers. And as we stated, Jesus prophesied that was what was going to happen. That was coming. And here we see, as James writes about it, we see it happening. And so that's the context here. Our persecution. So for us today, we're going to look at it as we talk about this lesson and study through it, what James wrote here, how that applies to us today and the persecution of us today and that would happen. So as I put outline on this lesson together, I'd go ahead and jump to verse 8 of James 5. Be patient. Well, be also patient. So be patient. Now, this word in English has a couple of different meanings, but in really here this is about endurance, to persevere, to endure under hardships, patiently bearing, and it's with misfortunes or troubles, and also offenses and injuries. And this is Thayer's definitions of this. Actually, injury. And so to endure these things, to persevere these things, and that's the type of patience that's being referred to here, the endurance aspect of it. So to bear up under, you know, to endure, to bear up under the load, to endure these. So that's what James is asking, or so teaching them there. Be ye patient. Now, he's referencing back to the farmer and how the farmer is patient. And notice there in verse 7. Be patient, therefore, he starts out, be patient, therefore, because of the persecutions in verse 6 and previous, right? Unto the coming of the Lord, behold, the husbandman or the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth. He has long patience for it until he receives the early and latter rains. So be patient, because it's going to take a while. It's not going to happen immediately. You have to be able to endure and bear up under this. The farmer waits. He plants the seed in the ground. He waits for the rain. He waits for it to grow. Basically, he's waiting for God to do his work in the plant, in the production of fruit process. And finally, at the end, it'll be ready. Just like the farmer bears up and waits and bears with this, so do you. And so we see that farming analogy made there. And then he instructs them to have an established heart. An established heart. Be patient also, as the farmer. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. So have an established heart. The idea, again, maybe is probably a word closer to what we would use here. To make stable. To be firm and fixed. Our heart needs to be anchored. Our heart needs to be anchored. And and it's a strength of mind. It's mental toughness is a word we might use, mental strength as well. Our hearts, he instructs them to have their hearts established or firm. And the idea, to me, or anchored deep and braced. And after a deep embrace, in other words, so on the farm when I grew up, we built fence from time to time. And so I found this online, and if you built fence, this is a standard quarter post system that we put in. The idea is the post here in the middle, you set that thing deep in the ground, and you're going to put a fence against it, and you're going to pull against it. Well, with time, that post is just going to lean right on over. You put four or five strands of barbed wire, you can easily have a quarter mile of fence pulling on that one post. So it's not just being anchored deep in the ground, you have to brace yourself. And the idea is to brace. And see, look, that's not anchored very good, is it? I just almost threw that off the podium up here, on the floor up here. Anchored, deep, and braced. The idea is our hearts have to be ready for this. They have to be prepared for this. And it's going to take pressure. It's going to take force. There's going to be difficulties that's going to come our way. We have to be anchored deep and braced in our lives. So he's calling for them that their hearts to be that way. That their hearts to be that. Be able to endure, to have an anchored and braced heart, be fixed and fixed strong. And then in verse 9, he brings up another point. Do not grudge one another. Or it actually the term is that to groan or sigh or murmur and complain. I think we probably know the word murmur and complain the most. But don't grudge against one another. And it's when I think about that, when times get difficult, when we're under pressure, when we're being persecuted and tried, sometimes our patience can wear thin, can't it? You know, we might want to grumble, to ourselves, and then in this case, might even grumble with each other, and that happens, right? Because we may lose patience, in the English sense, where we just lose patience with each other and murmur or complain against each other. He says, "Don't do that, lest you be condemned." So he's warning them in these situations, don't turn on your brother and don't turn on your sister in this situation. Lest you be condemned, there in verse 9. So that's how he wants a Christian to respond. The Jews who are enduring this persecution, these difficult trials and times in life. That's what he calls for them to do. And then he gives them encouragement. He gives them encouragement in a couple different ways. Let's look at how he encouraged them, because this can encourage us too. And first of all, persevere till your day. I'm using the term your day because this is a benefit to the Christian here. In verse 7, notice let's go back. The reference in verse 7 is till the coming of the Lord. And the idea of that is a judgment that was coming. And if you think about it, what judgment was coming for the Jew? God was about to bring the Roman Empire down upon the Jewish nation. And the Christians were being warned about it. Jesus prophesied about it in Matthew 24. You know, you be ready, because when this day happens, you need to do these things. So there's a day coming, and I think that's what this particular teaching of James is still referring to. Their day is coming, and notice there's an escalation here. In verse 8, a similar term, except he adds it draws near. It draws near. And then in verse 9, the coming Lord is very near. Notice it says there, the judge stands at the door. Your day is near. I'm sorry, the Lord is coming. The coming of the Lord is near, is close. It's not only close, he's standing at the door. He's waiting to walk through. That's how close, and to me when I saw that, there's an escalation there. Just the fact that he's coming, it's close, and it's very close. And so that's for them to encourage them, say, look, your trials are almost over. This is about to be taken care of. God is about to do what he needs to do. You're almost there. And I don't know, if you think about this in life, when we have struggles and trials we're going through, we're put under a lot of pressure, whatever it is, sometimes we need that encouragement just to hang on just a little bit longer. Just make it a little bit longer. Take that next step. I know that affects me a lot when I try to run. Just one more step, Ross. One more step. You're almost home, or you're almost where you want to get to. You're almost there. It seems to be an encouragement he's given by saying these things, and especially in this order. It's almost there, guys. Just hang on a little longer. We know you're being persecuted. Times are hard, but just hang on just a little bit longer, because your vindication is coming soon. And that's one of the important aspects of Christianity. Our vindication is from God, right? We're not to take our own vengeance, and that's taught several places in Scripture. But God's about to vindicate them. God is about to. He's about to bring the Roman Empire down upon Jerusalem and punish the Jewish nation again in time. And I think that's what this is referring to here. It's also a heads up, so you know what? Get things in order. It's close. You know, when things are close, you want to make sure your own house is in order. So this prophecy is basically letting them know to make things right. Pay attention to what he's teaching. You know, be patient, be steadfast, and stable and anchored deep, and don't be grumbling and murmuring. So get your house in order. So this, but I think the overall tone though is encouragement. So don't worry, this is about to be taken care of. This is about to be taken care of. Then he also talks about the blessings of God in here. The blessings of God. We count them blessed. So he kind of, this is what I kind of call the cheerleader section of it, as he gives them encouragement. You know, when somebody's being persecuted, it's yay, yay, rah, rah, and you're like, no, this is not fun, is it? This is hard. But look, we count them blessed who have suffered. In verse 11, we count them blessed who endure. And then he gives the example of Job. And I thought, none of us want to be a Job, do we? We don't want to be a Job. We don't want to bear the burden that the prophets of Old Testament bore. And Jesus, though, taught, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. So very parallel to Jesus' beatitude there. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. So, in a small way, that's an encouragement. You know, we count them blessed. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's difficult. There's hard things in life, but we count them blessed. In particular, talking there of Job and also of the prophets who lived before. An example in verse 9, he spoke of, verse 10, the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering and affliction and patience. So the previous verse also talks of the prophets. We count them blessed. We count them blessed. Because we know the end of the Lord, or the conclusion of the Lord. What is the conclusion of the Lord? He is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Why can we be blessed? Why can we be encouraged? Don't forget who God is. God is going to vindicate you, yes. But he is also very pitiful and of tender mercy. And if you are in the right, if you're in the right place, in other words, if you're standing in good standing with God, you will receive his mercy and his pity. But if you're not, the other consequence of that is you're going to receive his wrath. So, and the idea of pitiful is a feeling, whereas mercy is an actual action, is the way that is thought of. So the Lord, he's reminding them, God is merciful and pitiful. Yes, you are enduring persecution. Yes, it's hard. But don't forget who God is. Don't forget who God is, because in the example of Job, remember how Job was blessed? In the end, Job was blessed more than he was at first. After he endured all that he endured and the horrible and hideous things that Satan done to him, the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. And that's the example here that James uses and the Holy Spirit uses. Look at Job. Yeah, he endured persecution, but guess what? The end of his was better than the beginning. Yours will be too. Your end will be better as well, is what he's teaching them there. Remember Job. Remember Job. And that is referenced there in verse 11 in particular. He makes that example. Persecution, 2 Timothy 3. Right? All who will live godly will suffer persecution in Jesus Christ. All that will live godly will also endure trials. But I think we're specifically referring to persecution here, okay? Something that Satan does versus something God allows. This persecution that was by the Jews is something that was of an evil root and not of good for them. It was against them and fighting them. Notice the Christian response, as we talked about the word patience, bearing up under, established heart, anchored, embraced, anchored deep, embraced heart. So that we're prepared to handle these things. We bear up under them and we prepare that we can still stand strong in the face of these things. That we're not complaining against each other. Don't turn around and fight against one another. Don't let that happen, because you're going to be tempted to, because vindication is coming soon. God is going to resolve this. God is going to take care of this. He is going to have judgment and justice against your enemies, your adversaries. And plus, God blesses. Don't forget His mercy and His pity that He has for those who follow Him. So great encouragement in the face of the trials that they have. There is great blessings from God, as kind of talked about here. So what of us today? What of us? Let's go back and talk about this just a moment. Are we enduring suffering like they did? And are we enduring persecution like they did today? No, we're not. Now, I think we could probably go to some countries that we could probably receive that kind of persecution if we're just really looking for it. But where are we going as a nation? And I think maybe that's what's in the back of my mind, is how do we prepare for what may be coming? I'm not confident we're going down a good road as a nation. So what's going to happen with us? What's going to happen to churches? Can we prepare ourselves and be ready for that day? And even more importantly, I think we all are concerned about our children. More likely, they're going to see it even worse than we're seeing it, and then our grandchildren. And so I think in the back of our minds as Christians, that we prepare ourselves and realize that it's going to be harder. That the day that we are persecuted like the Christians were during the first century, that could be coming to us. That could be coming to us here in the States. And certainly, it's not going to all come at once. It will be slow. It'll be a bit by bit, piece by piece. And we see things beginning to happen now with like freedom of speech and consequences for those who speak out. And that's beginning to show itself. Now, how rampant it gets and how much it affects us here in Des Moines, I don't know. Don't have a crystal ball for that. But I don't think it's going well. I don't want to bust anybody's bubble. I just don't think things are going well for our country. And so I want us to think about this and in our minds think about going forward in our lives and our children's lives to prepare them to be able to have the patience and endurance that we're going to need to have deeply anchored heart that's braced, that can withstand it like that fence that you put that's pulled against that post, that we're going to have to be prepared to stand and endure and hold through some difficult times. I feel like they're coming. But there is encouragement. It's not all loss. It's not all an end. There is and always has been a message for the faithful, of blessings from God, an encouragement to withstand those things, that the end will be better than it is now. And that's always the case with God. He will provide for us. He will vindicate us of our enemies. He will bless those who follow Him. And no, it may not be in this life. Look at Job. He was blessed in this life, but look at other prophets. How they killed prophets and how they tortured prophets and Christians themselves. That day could come. But ultimately, we have a home waiting for us in heaven. Our next lesson is, to me, another builds upon that, in that we have blessings of discipleship. When I looked at the very end of James 13 through the end, it kind of, in my mind, if you step back and put one word to it, and I pick two, brotherly love, which is actually one word in Greek, so I guess I can qualify that. It is one word, brotherly love. When we look at that next passage there is a support mechanism, a blessing of discipleship, of working together, that we rejoice and pray together, we lift each other up, and that's what we're going to talk about next week. An encouraging lesson, I think, for us to look at and consider and to learn from that James teaches the Christians there. Are you enjoying the blessings of discipleship today? If you've not been baptized and follow Jesus' command, you are outside of that the blessings that are offered. Also, power and prayer there is mentioned. If you've not been baptized, you're outside of some of the blessings of Jesus Christ. He offers many blessings. They begin at your conversion. When you're baptized and had your sins washed away, You become a Christian, you take that name on, and then begin to take on that walk of life. And we encourage you to make that change or make that step this morning to begin that walk. And if you've begun that walk and you stumbled, maybe you've not been steadfast, or maybe there's something in a public nature that you need to, we wish to have the prayers of the saints. We always offer you an occasion to make that known. And we encourage you to do so as we stand and sing our song of encouragement.